second quarterly refresh meeting. We have a wonderful name that we gave to it. We call it quarterly because we're going to do it every quarter. Our next one's going to be December 12th. And refresh because every time that we do this, we get a great opportunity to talk to readers and subscribers and hear what you have to say and what you're thinking and just reboot everything that we're doing. And of course, it's a meeting. So that's pretty obvious. I want to thank our sponsors. We have a bunch of terrific sponsors. Reyes Kersen, who is coming back a second time. We're really grateful to them, as well as the Chicago Realtors. We're also very grateful to them. Outreach Experts, they're the wonderful people who helped make sure that this was all organized and it looks as nice and as good as it is, as well as Daly and George's. They're also a second-time sponsor. We're really grateful to have them. And then finally, of course, WGN Radio, who were recording this as a podcast here tonight. And then towards the end of the evening, we're going to go on live on WGN Radio on the Justin Kaufman Show. So tell all your friends at home to turn on 720 AM radio so they can hear it. So that's really exciting. Really glad about that. We've had 2 years of growing readership. Jim Dispenza and I kicked off the former Alder Track in October 2014. Kind of hard to believe. And all of you may have heard the story, but essentially this time it happened because Jim said, hey, let's do this. This will be really cool. We'll make this PDF and everybody will like it. And he was right. And we have hundreds that subscribe to our weekday first report, which is the subscriber product. As all of you know, it's a terrific product. And actually our two reporters, Claudia and AD, are laboring away. AD is covering the county board. They had a very big series of committee meetings today. And Claudia covered the never-ending police reform hearing today, which I think went about 8 hours. Over 1,500 people have purchased a racing form at one time or another, and I'll talk about that. We've got a great podcast, the Aldercast. If you're not listening to it, go on to iTunes and get the Aldercast. It's super awesome. Claudia and AD both used to work for NPR, so they really know how to do this. We've got all kinds of great clips from past show, past meetings and funny things that Carrie Austin says. yes. And thousands more received the free review email. I want to talk a bit about the Illinois Racing Form. Look at this, 224 pages. If you subscribe to the Racing Form, oh, that looks really good. Every Illinois legislative campaign, maps, stats, campaign contributions, the comptroller race too. It's a PDF that you get every week. It's updated every week with all kinds of cool data about campaigns and everything that's going on. You pay $25, you get it every week. And then for the last month, you get it every day up to the election. Just $25, go to the dailyline.net/store. And then you can look at a much better rendering of who is he? Richard J. Oglesby. Yeah. Not the guy the train station is named after, his grandpa. Richard J. Oglesby is a three-time elected Republican governor of Illinois. The last time that he was elected, this is so awesome. He made a deal with his lieutenant governor that he would resign immediately and for the lieutenant governor to appoint him as senator. So, hey, you know, you got to admire that. Only in Illinois, that's right. So we're pretty excited to have this going out. Please get it, because I think you're going to love it. Here's an example of one of the pages. That really doesn't look very good. I'm sorry. But it's cool. You can come look at this if you want to afterwards. Next month, we're going to put out our annual report for subscribers. It's a free PDF download for all subscribers. We've updated all the aldermanic bios. It's another 200-something page tome. We also this year have bios on all the Cook County officers and commissioners, as well as, and this is the major thing, every single city board and commission and all the members of those boards and commissions and how to contact them. So if you're really interested in the Animal Care and Control Board, we will show you the 8 people on that board. So with no further ado, I want to introduce our panelists. And please hold your applause to the end because we know that they're really awesome, but we want to give them the awesomeness all at once. Our first panelist is Bobby Otter from the Center of Tax and Budget Accountability. Bobby, come on up and bring your drink.
Water.
Or water. Well, okay, sure. And Bobby is a terrific. Why don't you come down here so I can do the handoff for the thing? Bobby has tremendous experience. He's really been terrific. I think that you're all going to be wowed by the presentation that he's going to have here today. I've already taken a look at it. I'm going to switch microphones now. That sounds better. Our next panelist is Mike Reaver. Mike, you want to come on up from the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce? I've known Mike for a very long time. He's worked on the West Side, and now he is the Director of Government Relations for the Chicago Chamber of Commerce. And then our next person is Brian Bernardoni. Brian is also Director of Government Relations for the Chicagoland Realtors. And I think that you'll find that Brian has more deep insight on all kinds of little picayune things going on in Chicago politics. Also, if you want to waste about an hour or so, ask him about Sven Gulli.
There's nothing wrong with Sven Gulli.
No, it's not a waste of time at all. And then finally, Craig Chico. Craig is the executive director of the original neighborhood organization, founded by Saul Alinsky in the 1930s, the Back of the Yards Neighborhood Council, and really excited to have all four of you gentlemen here tonight. So please give a welcoming round of applause. Bobby is going to kick off with a presentation in a minute, but before we do that, I want to let you all know about this really cool thing, which is that if you go to thumbs.thedailyline.net, you'll be able to enter in your own questions of the panel, and then vote up and vote down other people's questions. So if you have a really awesome question, vote it up. And if somebody's a bonehead, vote it down. And then I will see it here on my iPad and will be looking at them and then asking the questions as we go along. You can see the first question there. Here's a question. And then we also have Wi-Fi login there. And I'm going to show the screen to you again after Bobby's done with his presentation. So thank you all very much. And now, Bobby, take it away.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for coming out tonight, and thank you for the Daily Line for having us here today. My name is Bobby Otter. I'm the budget director here at the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability. We are a think tank that focuses on Illinois issues mainly. Do a lot of Chicago stuff, too, especially now with the city being in the situation that it's in. So I guess the question to ask, or the title was, is Chicago's fiscal crisis over? Does anybody here think it's over?
Show of hands.
Show of hands. Yeah, I didn't think
no,
so.
No, okay.
And to kill the suspense, it's not over. In fact, in many ways, we're just beginning this kind of fiscal crisis. So today we're going to kind of go through not much how we got here, but more where we're at and where we're headed and what the problem is. Pensions.
There we go.
So this right here is just a quick overview of the Chicago budget. It's comprised of six funds. The biggest fund is the corporate fund. That's the fund that you probably most know and think about. That's where police and fire is, for example.
Bobby, they can't really see it very well, so if you can describe some of the bigger numbers. Yeah, unfortunately, it's not showing
up. Sorry about that. We won't spend too much time here, but it's about a $9.3 billion budget in FY16. Spending is up a little bit, about $84 million. That's mainly due to the pensions, though we do see an increase in the corporate fund. I guess you can't really see, but there is an increase in the corporate fund, too, from 15 to 16. But most of this is coming from the pensions, especially when we go back to FY14, for example.
Sorry, here we go. Having some technical difficulties.
And next here, we're looking at revenue here in Chicago, the revenue history. If we go back all the way to 2009 and 2010, spending from the corporate and the corporate fund and the other four funds, we're not including the grant fund here, they're roughly the same. And then we start to see them break apart. And the those other funds, those non-corporate funds, are actually, that's the line that's up there. And the gap that you're seeing there between the two lines is mainly driven by the pensions, the pension payments that the city has had to make. And that's because property taxes, which I'm sure you're all aware, were increased in 2015. Those payments don't go, most of the property tax payment doesn't go into the corporate fund. It actually goes into those other four funds. A lot of it goes towards the pensions that we will talk
about. So that rising yellow line, the top line, is which?
Those are the non-corporate funds. And that bottom line, the red line, is the corporate, that's the corporate fund. So the fund you're most familiar with is the lower fund. Most of the spending is in those other four funds.
It shows up a little better.
Shows up a little better. So this is where we're at right now. This is the most recent data from Kafka, at least. It's from 2014. And as you could see, the labor, the top fund there, their pension fund is funded at about 64% right now. That's the best shape. And unfortunately, that's not even considered healthy. 80% is probably the bare minimum for healthy. And ideally, you want to be at 100%.
And so the four funds are...
I'm going to go through them right
okay,
now.
Okay, great.
Next is the municipal pension fund, which, for full disclosure, I have 3 years in this fund. This fund is at about 41% funded right now, and it has fallen... it was at 67% funded back in 06. So that's a 27 percentage point drop in the last 10 years. And then we have police and fire, which are really driving the costs right now as far as the pension payment and the property tax increase. Those are at 21 and 27% funded at the moment. All told, all four of these funds, they're at 34% funded right now. And I think a big thing to remember, or a big thing to take away from this, is that these pension payments aren't because of the current employees. Yes, the normal cost is a cost, but most of the payment that Chicago has to pay or will have to pay is because of the debt on the pensions, this unfunded liability. So really what the city has right now, and the state too for that matter, is a major debt problem. It's not a spending problem, it's a debt problem. And we have to pay down that debt because we owe our retirees and our current employees their pensions. And also the Supreme Court in the state of Illinois has said you really owe them their pensions. There's really no way around that at this point in terms of reforming the pensions, as a lot of people like to hope to do. So this is, we're looking at just the police and fire funds. And the reason why we're looking at them is because back in 2010, SB 3538 was passed. And this got rid of this goofy multiplier that we had and put together an actual payment plan that the city had to start following, but it didn't go in effect until 2015. It has since been modified when SB 777 or 777, it passed. Was given to the governor. The governor actually vetoed it. And then in probably the most surprising thing that happened in a while, the veto was overridden. And that has helped Chicago taxpayers, at least in the short term. In the long term, I would argue that it's hurt Chicago taxpayers. But what it's done is it's lowered payments for the next 4 years for the police and fire departments. So in 2014, we were paying $300 million into those pension funds. Now we're paying, in 2015, we saw that huge jump, over double, $619 million. 2016, same story, $672. I'd like to point out one more jump in 2020. It goes up to over $1 billion from about $825 million. Does anyone want to guess why they chose 2020? Come on, you guys read the Daily Line? it's a pure coincidence. There's an election in 2019, and so either the current mayor or whoever the new mayor is would have to deal with it then, along with all the aldermen. Next, we're going to quickly go over the municipal finance or the municipal pension fund. This looks really bad. We're paying about $160 million into it. And in 2018, about 10, 15 years from now, it has us paying over $1 billion. So what's happening? Well, the city is figuring that this pension fund will go insolvent in about 10 years. And when that happens, we go to a pay-as-you-go system, and that's going to send costs through the roof. However, this is pretty unlikely that this scenario exactly will happen for a number of reasons. First of all, we've already tried, the elected officials have already tried to reform this pension fund, but it was overturned by the Supreme Court. Therefore, we're back to zero on this. We're not zero, but we're back to where we were on this. And since we've already seen some progress on reforming this pension fund, I think it's safe to assume that we're going to see another push for it. Also, the mayor has, it seems like if his water and sewer tax is approved, the money from that will go towards the municipal employees pension fund. So even though this looks really bad, I think it's somewhat safe to say that it won't happen. Obviously, nothing's guaranteed. Maybe we do go down this path. But in all likelihood, I don't think this doomsday scenario, which this really is, will occur. So how are we going to pay for this? We've already seen the city, the mayor and the city council pass a property tax increase. That went into effect retroactively for 2015, and if you get a property tax bill, you saw it in your July property tax bill. A fairly big increase in the property tax, about $300 million, or a little over $300 million in 2015. And it's going to continue to rise, or it's projected to continue to rise. These aren't locked in yet. They get locked in at the end of December technically, so therefore I'm just saying projected, but we're projected to be all the way up to $1.4 billion in the property tax levy by 2018. And pretty much all this increase is going towards police and fire from the property tax, is going towards paying the bill that's due on the police and fire pension funds. And we're going to need more, as you remember from that 2020 slide, we're going to need some more money, right? So I think a question is there an appetite for more property taxes? At the city level, right, property taxes are kind of locked in right now, so maybe there is. But then you got to remember, CPS is increasing property taxes by $250 million, actually a little more than that because they're going to raise the levy too. So to your average homeowner in Chicago, they just got hit with a property tax bill a couple months ago, and they're going to get hit with another property tax increase of $250 million a year from now, So the question, I think it's a legitimate question. Is there room, is there an appetite for further increasing the property tax? Anybody from the suburbs is quick to point out that they pay a lot less in property taxes than Chicagoans. That's a debate for another day, but I think it's worth pointing out right now. They pay more. Chicagoans pay less. Suburbanites, I'm sorry about that. That is a big mistake. Thank you for correcting me, Alderman. They pay more. Don't move to the suburbs. Stay in Chicago. I lower property taxes. The mayor, as I said, has proposed increasing the tax on water and sewers. This would bring about $250 million, $240 million more. Again, this would help, but again, we're not getting near what we need if you just kind of add up these various pension funds, plus continue to think about the services that Chicagoans want, demand. People want more cops on the street. That requires hiring more cops. That requires more money. Right now, all of this money, all this revenue is going towards our pension funds. So where could this money come from? One suggestion that we really like at the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability, I shouldn't say we really like, but we begrudgingly like, because this is a regressive tax, is to expand the sales tax base. If you look back at 1965, About 40% of the Illinois economy was in goods. 51% of the Illinois economy was in services. Fast forward to 2012, 17% of our economy is in goods and 72% of our economy is in services. For the most part, we don't tax on sales. We don't have a sales tax for that 72%. We're taxing that 17%, but we're not taxing that 72%. So our tax, this is an Illinois problem, but it would help Chicago, as I'll get to. Our tax system is not keeping up with where we're at as an economy, as a state. So expanding the sales tax base, that would bring in about $2 billion roughly to the state. That could be transferred to CPS, for example. Some of that could be transferred in education, which would get to CPS. Some of that could go into intergovernmental affairs, which would find its way to Chicago. And then on top of that, Chicago could piggyback on the expansion of the sales tax base. So now that Chicago is taxing services, say haircuts, we're not taxing haircuts right now, legal services. Actually, we're not proposing taxing legal services, but if you were, you would solve pretty much every problem in the state. But haircuts, we like to say haircuts, lawn care services, gym membership, country club membership, things like that aren't currently a part of the sales tax. Include those in the sales tax. You're going to raise $2 billion at the state level, and anywhere from 250 to, I'd say, about 400 million for the city itself. So this would be a significant windfall for the city. It's not going to solve all the problems, but it would be a step in the right direction. I am going to leave us on a bit of a gloomy thought here. Yeah. Again, the bar is still open. What if there's a recession? Right now, our pension funds are in such shape that it's unclear they'd be able to handle a significant downturn in the economy, because that, as we've seen, just look at the 08. I don't know if you can see the 08, but in 08, the returns for the police fund was down 28%. When you have the unfunded liability that we have right now with police and fire and even the municipal fund, a 28% loss in the rate of return would be pretty gigantic. And you'd run into the possibility that the funds would go insolvent. I don't know if they would or not. It's too close to say. But, I mean, if they're at 22, 25%, a hit like that to the assets would be very, very dramatic, because right now we're paying out more than we're bringing in on these funds, too. So a recession, hopefully that it doesn't happen, but we're now year seven into the recovery. And if you look at U.S. history, recessions tend to happen every 7 to 10 years, roughly. Maybe this time's different. Hopefully this time is different. But it's something that I think, especially as we contemplate the future of the city, we may be taking care of things on a year-to-year basis. But what if a recession hits? What happens to those pension funds at that point? That's going to be a lot of money that Chicago taxpayers are on the hook for. So I'm sorry to leave everybody with the doom and gloom there. Hopefully it doesn't happen, but I think it's something that really hasn't been talked about much, and just running it up the flagpole for people to think about, and that's all I have for everybody.
So, Bobby, actually, we already have a question, which is, how do we get a copy of your presentation? We can put a link to it in tomorrow's Daily Line.
Yes.
Great.
You have it, yes.
Yeah, all right. Perfect. So we'll have it in tomorrow's Daily Line. You can take a look at it, and then we're also going to have we're going to have a podcast recording of this as well, too. You can listen to this later. So thank you very much, Bobby. That was a terrific presentation. And I think that really, really uplifted all of us. I know that I feel really good. And so I want to go ahead and I want to ask each of the other folks here on the panel, and if you, each of you could answer this, and we'll start with Mike, we'll just go down the line. So Chicago's in a fiscal crisis. What does that mean to you from your perspective? You know, how does that impact you and your members in the chamber?
So the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce represents nearly 1,100 members, their 400,000 employees, and over $24 billion in revenue. So how it impacts our members is that, for instance, as Bobby was talking about with the property taxes, most of you probably already know, but Cook County has a very archaic and unfair property tax classification system that assesses property, basically makes commercial and industrial property pay 2.5 times more in their property taxes than a residential homeowner. That, as Bobby mentioned earlier, and the alderman actually mentioned, keeps property taxes artificially low for homeowners. And it gives them this perception that, you know, property taxes are lower than they should be. So from our perspective, that's a big issue that impacts our members, is that property tax classification system. So when you're talking about a $588 million property tax increase that was passed last year, most of that is gonna hit the Central Business District and a lot of the North Side businesses the hardest, because that's where most of the businesses are in the city of Chicago. And that's a big issue for our members generally. And then you add on to that this kind of cumulative impact, this layered impact of adding a $13 minimum wage by 2019, a plastic bag ban that did nothing to actually ban plastic bags nor eliminate waste going into the stream, but they passed it anyway. That's a huge cost on employers. When you add on and layer on these additional mandates, that's a real concern for our businesses, not only the headquartered businesses here in Chicago, but also the neighborhood and local businesses in Chicago and throughout the neighborhoods in all stretches of the city. So that cumulative impact is really huge for our members. And the Chicagoland Chamber has been very consistent in saying that, for the most part, while we're not happy about the property tax increases that have come about, the business community is willing to pay their fair share, but you also can't then hit, especially the local neighborhood businesses, with those other mandates. There's got to be a little give and there's got to be a little understanding, and I think that's a really important piece to consider when talking about property taxes and getting Chicago and the fiscal ship righted in the city after decades of neglect. That's a big concern for our members.
Okay. Thank you. Brian, you want to chip in? And also, guys, when you talk, almost eat the microphone when you're doing that.
14,000 realtors in Chicago make up our membership. I think I can sum it up in one word, how it affects our industry, and it's uncertainty. There's this absolute cloud of uncertainty. If you look at the history of what's been going on just in recent times, you have an absolute perfect storm of crisis when it comes to buying property, when property taxes or taxes in general are your largest expense, especially in Chicago's neighborhoods. It's sometimes very hard to get across to some of the policy leaders that there's a city west of Western, south of Roosevelt Road, called Chicago. And those neighborhoods are getting impacted by what Mike said about a commercial property tax and industrial property tax rate that is crushing. It's crushing mom and pop businesses, and Mr. Chico will speak to that as well. He knows it because it's in his backyard. But when you're trying to recruit and bring people to Chicago, to develop Chicago in all 77 of the neighborhoods, and there's this absolute veil of uncertainty, what's going to happen tomorrow? When you're recruiting a business to come to Chicago, they shouldn't be asking, so what are you guys going to do about your pensions? What are you going to do about your fiscal problems in the state? They should be worried about what kind of storefront they should be going into, what kind of building materials are going to work, and we could go long on those issues, but they should be worried about the neighborhoods they're going into, what kind of character they can build to their business, and what that return looks like. And you can't even get past those questions anymore because it's just the absolute uncertainty. And when you hear groups, and you know, I want to be respectful of all opinions, but when you hear groups talk about the different variety of taxes that could be levied on top of it, frankly, upon these ears, they're all taxes on growth. So if we've got a very robust service economy, which the mayor has spoken to and the mayor is very proud of, well, let's tax it. That's just not going to be the kind of marketing that you need. And frankly, we've got lots of headlines that are out there that say we're not the next Detroit. But, you know, frankly, we've got to get past this whole Chicago is the greatest city in the world thing, and I'm as big of a booster of Chicago as there's ever been, but now we have to humble ourselves and look at what the other cities are doing that are far ahead of us on some of the most important indices. And some of those cities are cities I would never even considered. Austin, Houston, Raleigh, Fresno, Dallas. we've got to start looking at how we compare with those cities. And one of those things that you see consistent with a lot of those cities, other than growth, is the fact that they've got certainty when you've got the tax question that's out there. That level of uncertainty is going to be reflected in not only this year's budget and next year's budget, but we believe you're going to see four successive property tax increases because of the presentation that we just heard. It just makes entire sense. And when you add to that a public school system that's going to go to the max each and every year, regardless of how you feel about it, that tax bill isn't the kind of thing that opens up the door and says Chicago's a wonderful place to live, work, and play. It makes my members' jobs difficult. It makes everyone that's at this table, I think, very concerned about what it all looks like.
All right. That's happy. Craig, brighten us up.
Well, I have the unique perspective of dealing with residents and business. In the back of the yards, we touched a number of communities, the back of the yards, Inglewood, some of Brighton Park, some of Canaryville. And unfortunately, or fortunately in this case, the property values, you know, we all use the comparison of a $250,000 house in Chicago. We don't have any homes that are worth $250,000. So we're much less impacted by that tax. Nonetheless, we are going to be equally impacted by the sewer and water usage. Everyone uses 7,500 or about 7,500 gallons of water a month. So that's not going to change whether you're affluent or poor. So that is a concern for us. And even though we referenced Carrie Austin earlier, she did make the point that in low-income communities, everyone uses a laundromat. They're going to be the hardest hit. But on the other side of our street, east of Ashland, we have what's known as an industrial corridor called the Stockyards Industrial Corridor. Most of you remember it from the Union Stockyards and slaughterhouses. But it's a very successful example of what goes on in industry in Chicago. A lot of expensive properties exist there. There's Clear Channel. There's Aramark. There's a Tyson. Well, Tyson just left, unfortunately. But a lot of multimillion-dollar properties. And their taxes are going up, in some cases, as much as 20%. Now, Chicago exists right now in a unique environment, and it's hard for me to explain, but there's a tremendous demand to get into Chicago and continue to develop. A lot of people continue to want to bring their businesses here, but how long is that bubble going to last? We constantly deal with folks that want to move to Indiana, want to move to Bensonville, want to move to Bedford Park. Right now, it's mostly a threat, but at some point, it's going to become a reality. So we're concerned. Really, I don't think we've seen the toll this is going to take yet. A number of the small businesses Brian referenced, they get hit harder. They get harder not just because of the property tax, but because the fees that we're going to impose on top of that. Some of them are family-owned businesses that have two and three and four employees. Very difficult for them to absorb another tax or another fee. I think that's the most frightening thing to me, because we all know small businesses employ the most amount of people in this city and in this country.
If I may just, yeah. If I may real quick, one thing to kind of touch on with Brian's point about uncertainty and lack of growth perspective, which I think is a problem, and I would agree with Brian. To give you a very clear example, when we sit down and talk with aldermen and even the mayor's office, they pay a lot of lip service to, you know, wanting to take care of small businesses and local economic development. But a very specific example to give you that shows the impact of the property taxes and not taking into account the other mandates. The Chicagoland Chamber has an SBDC, a Small Business Development Center, that's half funded through the state and through the federal government, through the SBA, as well as subsidized by the Chicagoland Chamber's corporate members and foundation. A lot of the SBDCs throughout the state of Illinois are closing right now because of the budget impasse, but ours is still thriving, and we have over 300 clients. Now, where these policies have an impact is that our small business clients, we actually place STEM interns at the STEM schools from around Chicago and place them at one of our small businesses that are one of our small business clients. And we place them and we pay them the wages, obviously, and the minimum wages and everything for that, so that they get paid, but they're also learning a technical skill. But these small businesses can't afford to hire them otherwise, or another person, or whoever it is. But that's a very clear example of how these policies impact small businesses in the neighborhoods. And you have one small business that wants to hire, that wants to have that growth perspective, but they're being limited by, you know, plastic bag ban, all the different taxes and fees that we've talked about. And that's a very real example. And that's a lack of a growth perspective from the city council and from the mayor's office. And it's an inability of those small businesses to hire people. And we're subsidizing that right now as a chamber of commerce and as a foundation.
I always think about history and context, and I think Mike alluded to that. And part of the history of even being on the radio and doing what we're doing today, it has a lot to do with Paul Green. And Paul Green would always reach into the neighborhoods to discern what was actually going on over there. And the neighborhood my family's from is 24th and Oakley, which is, for some of you, Little Italy, but some people, it's the Heart of Italy neighborhood. And I still frequent the neighborhood because that's where the blood of my blood is from. And you look at what happens because of the aggregation of just higher property taxes and the fact that the taste of that neighborhood, which is honed by Chicago residents going back to the turn of the last century, is being decimated because the businesses can no longer afford to go there. I always think of the bread that my great-grandfather used to have. It was kind of an anise kind of bread. It's a strange story, but it's an anise kind of bread that only one bakery made in the city. And my father had that bread. I had that bread. My kids will never have that bread because the taste of that neighborhood is gone forever when that business closed. And every neighborhood in Chicago, I think, can associate with that, whether it's, you know, imagine how Taylor Street would be without Mario's Italian Lemonade. Imagine how Margie's Candies would, no more Margie's Candies on the northwest side, or Rainbow Cone on the southwest side, or your favorite wing place or whatever. Folks, this is all what happens when property taxes exceed rents per square foot, and that is happening in neighborhoods throughout the city of Chicago. To me, that's what's at risk. And people don't buy homes in neighborhoods where there aren't legacy businesses. And to me, that's the core and the core of where my passion is, of why we're so intensely interested in the fiscal health of the city.
I want to bring it to a question we have from the audience. A lot of people have voted up. Bobby, what is the least regressive solution the CTBA sees for solving Chicago's fiscal issues?
The least regressive. That's growth. A tough. Yeah, I mean, ideally growth. Look, not to sound like a broken record here, but a lot of this goes back to just how the state taxes poorly. And that trickles down all the way to the city. But you're not going to fix the state taxation, especially on income, because of the Constitution. So, look, ideally, you get a constitutional amendment. We move to a progressive tax, income tax. That some of that money is transferred to the city via, you know, intergovernmental transfers. Hopefully that helps solve the problem. But outside of that, you know, the city is looking at things like, as we're discussing, the property tax, which is, you know, it's not perfect, but it's also not as regressive as some of the other options on the board that would affect everybody at the same level, like the water and sewer tax, for example.
So that's a great question. And thank you for whoever asked that and voted it up.
I mean, the best way to solve that problem would be to go back in time and fund the pensions appropriately, you know, 15, 20, 30 years ago. I mean, if you look back, the pension systems weren't that poorly funded.
A difference then, though. The city has lost 25% of its share of population since 1950. We used to deliver mail twice a day in the city of Chicago, and we don't do that anymore.
It's the postal service, though.
Cities that don't have density aren't cities anymore. And you've got entire parts of the city of Chicago that are losing density. When you lose density, you lose property taxes, sales taxes, income taxes, transfer taxes, utility taxes. You can tell the vitality of a neighborhood just on those five taxes. And when you lose density, you end up being in situations where we start talking about things that no one likes to talk about, like a shrinking city. You've got neighborhoods that aren't performing where they should be performing. We've got to start getting away from taxing our way out of this problem and start looking at ways to grow ourselves out of this problem by allowing for more density in neighborhoods where we can create it. We've got to start taking a look at building codes that are entirely Stone Age when it comes to development. We've got to start taking a look at property tax reform that's meaningful. Why not look at reducing the property tax burden on commercial real estate of 30,000 square foot? If you want to save mom and pop restaurants and mom and pop businesses, let's do something about it that reduces that rate and allows those businesses to thrive and survive. Those are ways that you build dense neighborhoods and bring people to
I want to interrupt you for a minute there, because you're on a really interesting thing, and I want to hone this a little bit, Brian, which is there's a question that somebody asked, which is that, you know, you guys have all given a lot of reasons about why you don't like the way that things are. So, you know, what can we do about it? And so what I'd like to ask is, I'd like to bend that question a little bit, which is, each of you, and Bobby, you can go last. Mike, can you come up with two or three different things that we could do that are not related to revenue or, you know, those kind of things in order to improve the situation of Chicago that might ultimately improve revenue?
I mean, I think a lot of them, unfortunately, have already been kind of implemented. So,
put more muscle behind them, you know.
I think something as simple as licensing and permitting and zoning issues are something that's critically important, and that even though the mayor's attempted and the city council have attempted to make strides, that's something that still costs business owners a lot of money in sense of time and literal money. And that's something that should be fairly easy, and the chamber's on a task force right now with another group of stakeholders to hopefully figure out some of those and solve some of those issues. But that's something right off the top that should be relatively easy. But then you run into, you know, aldermanic, you know, preference and purview and kind of territory issues. And that prevents a lot of those efficiencies from happening.
So smoothing rezoning and reducing the fees and licenses.
Right. From a time perspective, that alone, it creates a great uncertainty, because this business is going to sit there for 4 to 6 months or longer just to figure out if they can put a sign up or if they can open their doors, if they're going to get inspected. Time is money. And I won't say literally, because, you know, it's always used improperly. But that is something that impacts business owners every day. And you talk about regressive, and you talk about hurting especially the local businesses who don't have high-priced attorneys, that don't have high-priced accounting firms. They're just trying to get by and trying to figure this out as they go. That's a huge issue. And I think another thing that would be important to fix would be to phase out that classification, the property tax classification system. And obviously it's not going to be done, because that is a, for all intents and purposes, property tax increase on residential homeowners, which when you're already raising property taxes, that becomes an issue politically, but that's an important thing as well. And then I think one other thought as far as uncertainty and regressiveness is that how it creates even more uncertainty is, I'll give you two specific examples. One is that the city and the county both had, now they're introduced, they're not really probably going to pass, but you have increases in gas taxes proposed at the city, at the county, and then you have potentially something at the state level related to an infrastructure program. So when you compound and add all those up of 5 cents at the city, 7 cents at the county, and then whatever it's going to be at the state, that's a huge impact on businesses and consumers. It's going to take money out of pockets. Now, there's not necessarily anything wrong with, you know, increasing a gas tax, for instance, if it's been used or going to be used historically for what it's supposed to be, which is infrastructure. But some of these have been targeted for other programs that, while well-intentioned and should be supported, is not what the gas tax originally been proposed for. So when you do something like that, when you have one hand, like the city, not talking to the other at the county or the state, that creates a great deal of uncertainty. When you have proposals thrown out there like a $16 head tax, and you have 14 aldermen signed on as co-sponsors, that creates great uncertainty. That is, it's detrimental to any small business owner that wants to start a business. It's absolutely disheartening to see you have 14 aldermen on the city council that want to tax an employer to hire more people. $16 per month times 12, I don't know what that is, but you know, that's a lot of money per employee. So those are the types of things when you talk about uncertainty and regressiveness and this lack of growth perspective, it's incredibly challenging for businesses and to create more jobs.
Brian, Three things, two or three things.
Mine's very quick. Boosterism is no longer a credible economic development tool. I think Cranes has it right. I think that the business community, and it's not solved at this table, but it's solved with everybody at this table, amongst others that are listening in and in the audience today. The bottom line is Cranes, has it right. We've got to come together and finally identify that Chicago is in crisis on this matter. We've got to identify what those solutions look like, and it can't be only part of you get to be part of that team that's coming up with the solution. It's got to be a more holistic civic issue at this point that brings in all the stakeholders and brings in as many of the voices as possible. I mean, we have a deep history of doing that in this city and coming up with the structures, but every time I testify on an issue where I say, you know, Chicago's got a problem on this one, you've got some booster that comes out saying, well, we're top five in this or number one in this. And when I go into the neighborhoods, I don't see that. And I think we've got to just come to realization that Chicago is our greatest city, but we've got to make it better than it is right now.
So declare it as a real emergency and then all hands on deck, employ
absolutely
all the smart people.
Absolutely.
Craig.
Two things. I don't want to beat the same drum, but recently the city council passed an ordinance which gave earned time off to employees. Now, I'm not against it, of course, but I think it was short-sighted in that it didn't take into account what effect, again, this is going to have on an employer that's barely making it or is marginally making it. If you will work 40 hours, you get another hour off. Now, that's mandated by the city, and I think we're overstepping our bounds, number one. And number two, I think it's onerous, and it's another fee, and it's another tax, and it's regressive on growth. So forgive me for beating that same drum. That's one thing. But the other thing is that I talked to about 20 business owners before today, and I found about 15 of them had really little or no impact on their taxes from the first installment to the second installment of this year, which surprised me to death. But I've come to find that the reality of that is that most of them are sophisticated enough to know how to appeal their taxes. That's become an art. It's become a science. And the five that were hit with increases were smaller companies that didn't have the wherewithal, the resources, or the fight or the will to fight that. And those are the guys, I think those are kind of the things that we need to look at too if we want to have a fair and equitable tax system.
So more transparent and equitable commercial property tax system.
Yes.
And just to add on with the earned sick leave, that's something that the chamber served on the task force and provided some recommendations. And given the political realities surrounding that issue, we came to them and said, along with our partner IRMA, the Retail Merchants Association, and we came to them and said, hey, we've talked to our businesses, large and small, and a lot of them small, and we came with very specific issues that we wanted to see resolved so that it would be implemented in an efficient way that wouldn't necessarily hurt these businesses. And the city council and the aldermen on the city council, as well as mayor's office, completely ignored those suggestions, and they were very real, thoughtful suggestions. And that's something that, again, there's a lack of growth perspective. That's a regressive kind of policy. But even when, you know, we're opposed to it in principle, and we come with real suggestions, and they're just thrown out outright, that's a real problem. And you know, it's an issue when the aldermen and the city council, mayor's office, continue to pay lip service to supporting small businesses, and they really don't.
Some of us have Springfield experience, and one of the great tools that you have in Springfield.
We've got to get Bobby in here, too.
Yeah, one of the great things that you have in Springfield is a fiscal note attached to every bill. And I think if aldermen and the mayor were aware of the fiscal ramifications on how some of the proposals impact housing affordability or economic development issues, and it was painfully clear, even on new proposals like bringing back the head tax. I don't know how many of you remember how hard the chamber and other groups fought to get rid of the head tax, and now we're talking about bringing it back. I mean, that was a massive. It had a massive impact on a lot of corporations leaving Chicago. And again, we've gotten a lot of corporations coming back to Chicago, and we're welcoming back with open arms in one swoop. And then, well, we're going to give you a head tax. Here you go, United Airlines, or here you go, some of these other groups. And it's a mixed message that goes back to the uncertainty theme.
Bobby.
Yeah. I've got four things that kind of all go together hand in hand. I think the first thing is create some sort of certainty. So let's figure out our taxation or debt problems at the state level. That will trickle down and help us at the city level. It'll help us figure that out. And at the same time, Let's stop with the Band-Aids, especially, I mean, the states now at this point, too, but especially at the city and specifically at CPS. Let's figure out what we need, and let's go get it. The property tax increase this year, okay, it was a step in the right direction. I would argue we needed more money. And we should have just gone and ripped should have been a bigger increase, and let's just rip the Band-Aid off. Let's get it over with. Because guess what? In 3 or 4 years, we're going to be dealing with it all over again, and we're going to have the same debate all over again, and they're going to, at the end of the day, I'm going to guess they're going to figure and vote for the tax and the property tax increase. But at the same time, let's fix the schools. Let's invest in the schools. CPS right now is in a lot of trouble just because of year-to-year budgets, but also the state is just not ending, state is not holding up its end of the bargain on education, especially for CPS. And, you know, if the schools are more attractive, then people are more likely to either stay in the city or actually come to the city, too. And I think when you combine all that together, it will make it look like you're actually investing in the city of Chicago, south of Roosevelt Road and west of Ashland, as Brian was saying. You know, when you close 50 schools and they're all pretty much on the south and west sides, I mean, what are you saying to the people that live in Chicago?
So I heard two things. I heard make it a huge increase, rip the Band-Aid, go big, and then the other is start investing in schools, really push hard for schools and make the schools
faster. And I think in part of ripping off the Band-Aid, you're going to create that certainty. So now businesses know what they're going to have to deal with. I mean, what I'm hearing a lot of is people are sick and tired of every year trying to figure out where they're going to get nickeled and dimed. You know, at some point, just make them pay the dollar as opposed to making them pay 10 cents or 12 cents or 15 cents or whatever it is every other year.
Okay. So I'm going to do the booster question here because we keep hearing this from people. Construction is off the charts downtown. You know, our office is in River North. We can see four big buildings that are being built within two blocks, especially residential. We hear Chicago is booming as a startup town. You keep hearing all this stuff about how great we are for startups. So considering this, I mean, do average businesses really think that city finances is a real problem, or is it just sort of background noise?
I can chime in. The Chicagoland Chamber actually does a Chicagoland small business survey every year, and it's a third-party validated survey with the Loyola University School of Business, the Quinlan School of Business. And so our statistics very clearly show that local taxation, 44% feel business owners feel negatively impacted by local taxation. 17% changes in local ordinances they feel negatively impacted by. There's a lot of statistics, and this is from response rate of over 574 respondents, Chicago and Chicagoland region wide. So it's a very real issue. And there are statistics to back it up. And I think it's important to keep in mind that when those headquarters, and it's a really great thing, I do believe, and we support, obviously, these headquarters, a lot of them are members coming to Chicago. But we cannot become so dependent on the Central Business District as we've always been, and not see any growth in the neighborhoods, not see any growth in the South and West sides. If you have that kind of growth perspective, then you're creating more jobs for people in the neighborhoods, and you're quelling the violence to at least some extent over there, and all of this kind of plays together. But it's important to keep that in mind when talking about headquarters being built downtown or corporate relocations or, you know, all these towers going in. Think of the people that are coming downtown that are going to live in those places. They're not people that are looking for jobs, right? They've already got them, and they're likely downtown. There's a lack of focus and a lack of growth in the neighborhoods, and that's a real problem.
I think it's really susceptible to some of the concepts that were brought up earlier about what does a recession look like in this new model where you've got 47 towers going up downtown. A very few of them are condo. They're all rental. And when you get into situations where you're looking at that and trying to analyze where it fits, federal tax reform is being talked about next year. And there are three key things that are, I mean, I hate this phrase, but keep me up at night. Number one, if the federal government gets rid of the 1031 exchange, which is how most commercial real estate moves, we've got a big problem. If we get rid of the mortgage interest deduction or the property tax deductibility question, if either of those two go away, you have basically not only crushed home ownership, but you will have crushed home ownership for seniors that live in communities that benefit from that property tax deduction. Three changes to the tax code could be done very quickly by just simply raising the personal exemption, which is being talked about at the federal level. Now, that may seem like a far-off kind of concept, but federal tax reform discussions are going to hit the Hill as soon as this election is over. You put that into a mix where we're still trying to push growth, and you get rid of the very underpinnings that create growth, like the mortgage interest deduction for a high property tax city like Chicago, the property tax deduction, or get rid of the key tool that helps move commercial real estate, like the 1031 exchange. This conversation becomes quickly moot, and you start looking at how do we deal with those empty high-rises that we built across the city of Chicago.
Mike, can I add 17 wards in the city of Chicago contribute less than 1% to the city's budget or to the tax revenue, property tax revenue, which becomes our budget. If we don't fix the neighborhood problem, we're going to be in this situation for a long, long time. As it was pointed out just recently, we can't continue to depend on the downtown business district. We have to build up those neighborhoods. We have to build up their revenue source, and we have to get them contributing more. And I think if we don't do that pretty soon, I think right now, your question was, does the business district really believe it's a false problem? I think that there's a lack effect here. I've talked to a couple of law folks, as a matter of fact, in thinking about this, a couple of law firms who, unfortunately for them, were going through the reassessment along with the property tax increase, and their bills were astronomically higher, by more than 20%. So I think if that continues, I think we're going to see that lag effect become a quick reality, and we're going to see some slowdown in growth downtown.
So another great question from the audience is, and I want to go down the line, and what letter grade, A through F, would you give the mayor specifically for his dealing with the pension problem? And if you can start off by giving your letter grade and then, you know, 25, 30 words on what it is. And Craig, you want to start with that?
Yeah. Is he listening?
You're biased a little bit here. Yeah.
As long as he's not listening. I'd give him a B+ because it takes a lot of courage to do what he did. I mean, obviously, there were very few solutions that were easy, none that were easy. This has been a long time in coming, and I think I haven't heard anyone say to me, I'm moving. I'm moving my business. I'm moving my house. I'm selling. I'm leaving because of the property taxes. I don't know how much longer people won't move, but we're at that brink. But it was a very difficult decision. Someone had to have the courage to do it, including the alderman. The day of reckoning is upon us, and people are paying the piper. Look, people in the city of Chicago know what services they demand, and they know what services they've received in their lifetime or over the last two decades. And they know they've gotten them. They know that at some point you got to pay, and I think they're paying now. It's a very difficult thing that he's had to do, and he's done it.
Brian, letter grade,
yeah,
30 words.
I'd give him a B on courage and a D on inclusion. I think you still have neighborhoods that aren't being put into the quotient. It can't be downtown centric.
Okay, Mike.
So my boss worked for ROM several years ago, so this answer could get me in trouble. But I would say, you know, I'd give him a B. I think it took a lot of courage to finally address an issue that has been neglected and not solved for decades and built up over that amount of time. So I think he had a lot of courage. I think, though, that he made some tough decisions, especially with the lack of movement in Springfield, which has an impact, obviously, on everything in the city. So I'd give him a B.
Bobby.
Man, in many ways, it's an incomplete. I know I'm taking a cop out here, but he hasn't solved the pension issue. And for all that they've done, they kind of had to do it at that point in time. I think the argument is more, what grade would you give him for not raising property taxes when he entered office in 2011? That would have lessened the burden that we're facing now, because more money would have been going in the systems, and that would have lowered payments. Of course, also in 2011, we were more early on in the recovery. So, you know, there's an argument that maybe that would have slowed growth. I don't know. I think at the end of the day, I would probably give them a C-. They have done stuff. I don't think they've gone far enough, and I think they probably should have gone done something earlier. Definitely should have done something earlier.
Well, so the average between your four guys is a B minus.
You know, he's created an intellectual challenge, though, because he's put out there with the water tax and the garbage tax that this is going to fix bond ratings. And for those of us who actually care about that, you go, okay, well, maybe that's a fix. But then you kind of look at what that aggregate bill looks like. So it's kind of a hug and a slap at the same time. We're going to fix the bond ratings, but we're still not quite out of the mess yet.
Well, you know, I want to ask, Bobby, I want to ask you a follow-up question here.
If anything, we're entering the mess, so, I would argue.
But let me push a little harder on this, which is, I mean, is it real? Would it have been realistic for him to walk into office and go, hey, everybody, guess what I'm doing?
Well, I mean, he was, yeah, I mean, he could have. I mean, we hadn't raised property taxes in God knows how long. And then, he was promoting this, expanding the sales tax base, or at least going down to Springfield and fighting for it. So it's not like he was adverse to, he did increase the water tax at the end of the day early on. So it's not like he was adverse to new fees or new taxes. He just chose not to go down certain paths. I don't know why. I don't want to speculate.
Well, another piece, though, is that, let's assume that, okay, he walks in day one and says, guess what, everybody, you're all going to take it in the jaw. We're going to be raising property taxes. But it does seem that all of these different pensions come in a whole bunch of different pieces, and each one we've had to negotiate out. Would it have been realistic to say that in 5 or 6 years this problem could have been solved? Is this something that could have been resolved, you know, without Mussolini running the table? I mean, you know, in a couple of years?
It wouldn't have, if we moved to try to fix the problem earlier, it wouldn't have solved the problem necessarily, but it would have lowered the burden that we're now all paying. Look, he could have come in and he could have said, oh man, I didn't realize the city was in this big of a mess.
We did, though, right?
I mean, he didn't. I mean, he never mentioned somebody by name. I always forget who this person is, too, like the mayor. If anybody knows, let me know. He could have come in and he could have. Like, my job's being a policy analyst. It's not to be a political morning quarterback, but there definitely seems to be, if we would have taken this issue on earlier, and I realize there's a lot of pros and cons with the recession and the recovery and all that, but if we would have taken that on earlier, we probably wouldn't be looking at the huge increases we are now. We would have looked at an increase in 2012, 2013, rather than the huge jump that we're seeing in 2015, 2016.
Well, let me pose that question to the other guys. I mean, do you think that this is realistic, that this is something that could have been solved in 2 or 3 years? Or is this the dance that we've been going through? Is that just a fact of life?
I think I attacked the premise of the question. And it goes back to the basics.
Ticked you off with my Mussolini comment, didn't I?
I'm an Italian American. What do you expect? We've got to start looking ahead on it. I think the blame game, it was determined by the voters when they reelect people. I mean, there wasn't going to be a bitter pill swallowed by a lot of folks that are out there. I mean, there's some bitter pills that are coming in the next few weeks. I think with the water tax and the garbage tax, and we'll see if people remember in 2019, but it's probably unlikely. People aren't going to remember that specific thing. That's not going to be the tipping point. But I think looking backwards and blaming Bobby has put it, I think, eloquently. This is what we're in, and we've got to look at what tomorrow looks like.
All right. And I'll just look a little bit to the future. I think you'll find out how serious the mayor and the city council are going to be on this issue moving forward from a fiscal perspective when a lot of these contracts start coming up to be renewed, specifically with CTU and others, because the largest cost driver right now of that $136 million deficit is $70 million of natural growth and wages. And so if you're not negotiating and you're not controlling the growth in wages over the next 4 or 5 years, you're not only hurting ourselves as a city in the short term, but also in the long term when it comes to pension benefits. Now, that's not to say that, you know, the teachers don't deserve to be paid or others don't deserve to be paid. But I think when you talk about, you know, kind of everybody sacrificing, whether it's, you know, the homeowner, the residential homeowner, the business owner, and then city workers, I think it's important. And I think that's something that you're going to see how serious the mayor and the city council are when those types of issues come up, because they're driving the wages right now that create a lot of these deficits. And I think it's something that, when you talk about getting us out, you know, several years from now and kind of adding some stability, then you can talk about, you know, even larger increases if that's what you want to negotiate. But, you know, keep in mind, $136 million deficit right now, $70 million of that is driven by growth in wages. And that needs to be figured out. And I don't have the answer, and the chamber doesn't necessarily have a position, but I think it's an important conversation that needs to be had, and it's an important one.
Mike, I the first rule of politics is to get elected. The second rule is to stay elected. I don't believe the mayor would have been given the opportunity to fix this problem if he had rung the bell before the second term. It's unfortunate to say that, and I don't think that little of the voter, but I do believe, even for myself, that it would have been difficult to give him a second term. Now, I also, and I can't speak for him, but based on what I've read, I believe he was holding out hope that there would be some solution from Springfield, at least for teachers, in advance of this doomsday that we've faced recently. And I'm sure he was holding out hope that the economy would drive more revenue as well. So based on what I've read, I don't know that it would have been, certainly would have been less of a burden. Hindsight is always 20/20, but I don't think it's realistic to think that he would have been given a second term to solve this.
And politically looking ahead, I mean, one of his issues, and it's stating the obvious, is that it's very difficult and challenging to sell, you know, $1.1 billion in property taxes the past year and a half or so with no investment in the future. This is all paying legacy debt. And so when you're talking about people on the west and south sides or the north side with school issues or lack of teachers or, you know, a lack of jobs, he's not able to sell, and the city council is not able to sell this as an investment in the future. So it's very hard to explain politically to that mother in one of those neighborhoods or the fathers that have the kids and say, well, we know you need more teachers, or we know that, you know, you need an extra classroom, but we're the property taxes you're paying and your bills that you're seeing, you know, big rates, that's not actually going towards anything investing. And that's a difficult and challenging position to be in, I think, politically for him and for the council looking ahead to 2019.
And the politics get even more complicated because 2018 is a reassessment year. And now all of a sudden you've got to hope for a bunch of things to happen that go right. If the values go up, maybe the rate goes down and you've got yourself in a good situation. But if the talk of a 7-year recession becomes a question, then you've got a totally different thing. What happens if the valuation of all these buildings that we're building downtown and everything starts to slip and then the rates start going up? Then you've got the absolute worst situation. And again, that triennial reassessment takes place in 2018. The mayor and the 50 members of the city council are up in 2019. This is not a favorable situation.
It's a reassessment, though, for what part of the city, though?
The entire city gets reassessed.
Oh, it's the city just in one go.
The whole city reassessment takes place.
So, how is this something that you guys hear from your members, Mike and Brian? Do you hear about that from them, the sweating it out for 2018?
Oh, absolutely.
Are they conscious of it?
Absolutely. I mean, I think there's a whole series of different things that take place. You've got commercial and industrial folks that are looking for 6Bs. You've got folks that are...
Okay, I'm going to cut you out there, Brian. Oh, sorry. Hey, you know, hey, Justin, how are you? We're having a great conversation. I'm terrific. Thank you very much. We're having a great conversation here at the Hotel Monaco. We were just talking about, you know, what is the city fiscal crisis going to be looking like, when we get to 2019? And folks were pointing out that in 2018, all of the city is going to have a reassessment for property taxes. And so that's something that everybody's going to be thinking about when the election time comes around, because they're going to have a whole bunch more property taxes to pay. I want to go down the list. We've got Bobby Otter from the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability and some other folks. And I want to ask each of you real quickly, can you give me a sense, how do you think that the property tax issue is going to be something, and the city's fiscal crisis, is that going to be something that's going to be a campaign issue that people are going to talk about? Maybe you don't want to do that, Bobby.
I would assume so, yes.
Yeah, okay. I mean, following up, I mean, you know, Mike Reaver from the Chicagoland Chamber, is this something, I mean, voters have a really short memory. Yeah, are people going to forget about this? We're going to have property taxes raised this year, and then people will forget about it in 2 years.
Right now, I think that it will still be in everybody's minds because of, you know, the reassessments that are coming up in 2018. But I think the important consideration is that, again, those people in those neighborhoods and those communities are not seeing an investment in the future. It's very difficult to explain, you know, paying and paying all of this money, billions of dollars in property taxes and other taxes and fees, with no investment for the future of, you know, expanding classrooms or having the extra teachers or, you know, having more police on the streets or a lot of the issues that, you know, the city as a whole are concerned with and these questions that we're grappling with. It's very hard to sell a lack of investment when you're paying that much money in property taxes and you're not seeing a return on investment.
Brian Bernardoni from the Chicagoland Realtors, what do you say on this?
Property owners are reminded every 6 months of what their property tax burden looks like. Renters are reminded every year when they go for a renewal of the lease. So I think everyone is going to be quite erudite about what the property tax situation is, and I think they'll have a very good memory of what those costs look like when they go to the ballot box in 2019.
Erudite, we're educating everybody here. Thank you. And Craig Chico from Back of the Yards Neighborhood Council, what say you? Are we going to forget about this by 2019?
No, I don't think memories are short when it comes to people's pocketbooks, and I believe it will be fresh in our minds. And if I was a consultant working for one of the potential challengers to this administration, I'd be licking my chops. Fair or not, it's almost a death blow when you were the one that raised the taxes. I think the mayor may be able to overcome this, but if you don't make some investment into the city, especially, we haven't talked about it much, but especially into the areas that need it most with that are suffering from violence, and this has a relationship to our budget as well, we're going to have a tough sell.
Well, there you go, Justin. I think it certainly maybe it's just a silly question. You know, people are going to be thinking about this in 2019, but it certainly seems that everyone here in our panel has been worrying about it and concerned about it.
Question for you to ask the panel. I'm just interested in the political ramifications. Obviously, you know, when it comes to 2019, you're talking about the political problems with raising taxes. But aren't you sort of between a rock and a hard place? We talked about it, Mike, the idea that why not go up front, get the tax burden out of the way so we can get out of this fiscal crisis? And then the voters actually sort of say, okay, this is what we needed, a true leader to get us through this as opposed to somebody.
You know, we got Bobby Otter here from CTPA. He's talking about ripping the Band-Aid off. Go ahead.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I mean, I think the city would be much better off if it just actually made the investment, figured out what they needed, went and did it. It would create certainty if nothing else. People aren't going to like it. People aren't going to like it if you raise it by 50% or if you raise it by 75%. Or if you raise it by 2%, they're going to get complain and they're going to complain and they're going to complain. So just go do it, figure out what you need, and go get it done. I mean, I think it's going to be easier at the end of the day. And then you can even say, hey, look, I solved the problem. Even if you didn't, you can say at least I solved the problem rather than, hey, I'm back this year. Can I raise your water taxes? Hey, I'm back this year. Can I raise your garbage fees? Hey, I'm back this year. You know, can we, you know, increase, walking down the street? I mean, like, not to sound like George Harrison.
I can't wait to pay for that.
But I mean, I think just going and doing it would create the certainty also for businesses too, that they can at least figure out, you know, how to manage this as opposed to, you know, what are we going to get hit with this year and how much is that going to cost us?
This is for our WGN radio audience. The idea of us getting out of this fiscal situation that the city.
Brian Bernardoni.
Well, I think the panel has just asked every member of the city council to take on the profile of that John Kennedy asked for with this profiles of courage, that everyone just put their political careers at risk and vote the right way. And if we know Chicago's history, we can probably predict the outcome of what that really looks like at the end of the day. I think everyone's optimistic that the city can do better and that will grow, but I think the foundations haven't been set forth to create that yet.
So there you go. Optimism leavened by pessimism.
Mike Boucher and the panel. Is Chicago's fiscal crisis over? It's happening right now at the Hotel Monaco Ballroom right here in Wabash. Mike, continue the good stuff, and we'll talk to you later.
Thanks a lot.
There you go, Mike Boucher. How fun is that?
All right, and that's our panel, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for being here tonight. I want to thank our sponsors, and I also want to thank Bobby and Mike and Brian and Craig. This was a terrific night, and I think the bar is still open, so have another drink. Thanks a lot.